Hey, Waiting Warriors, welcome to another week on the Waiting Warriors podcast. This week, obviously, I have a special guest. Austin is back. Hi. This one's going to be a little bit different.
By a little bit, we mean a lot.
A lot, yeah. We're going to call this the James episode. Maybe I'll be able to come up with a better title, but with at least my experience with handling the grief and loss of a stillborn and a son. It really helped to hear other people's stories. And I've had a lot of people have asked, like, hey, my friend just miscarried, our friend just lost a child. What do you think are things that would be helpful for us to do? And things that we're kind of combining our experience, lessons learned, and sharing things that people have done that have really helped us. So hopefully it will help you guys.
Yeah. So I guess if you're watching this, we might not be smiley the whole time, and that's okay. If you're listening to this, it might sound not super upbeat at times, but again, that's because there's a little bit of trauma and grief still involved. And I would offer, if you've had a loss, if this is potentially triggering for you, just this is your warning now. Some of this is sensitive material, though we try and speak honestly about our experience and honestly about loss. It's also, I think, helpful and healthy to listen to those stories, both if you've experienced something or if you haven't. So to your own degree, stay with us. But I just wanted to at least put that out there.
So I think we'll just start. So in March 2021, I had a stillborn. I still don't know like what the term that I like is. So I guess going back a little bit before March, we found out Austin was going to be deploying, I don't know, like quote unquote.
We'll back it up.
Right term for that.
So let's start at the beginning of 2021.
Okay.
So 2021 starts, we knew we were pregnant and then baby number 5, and President Biden said, hey, we're going to activate federal troops to help with the vaccine effort for COVID-19.
Right.
And so at that time, we were not early in the pregnancy, 14 to 16 weeks, somewhere in there. So I guess relatively early, but entering the second trimester. And my battalion, because we had a medical company, we were put on a prepared to deploy order. So we were tapped for that potential assistance for FEMA's COVID-19 vaccine response under President Biden's directives. So with all that happening, we wanted to go find out the gender, and we did. We found out it was a boy, and that's how we knew it was going to be James, because we had 4 girls and no boys, and James was always going to be our boy's name, our first son. So January and February were kind of a whirlwind, finding out, hey, we're going to have a son, and hey, I might be leaving.
But we don't know where.
We don't know where or when, and we don't know for sure if
next week you're going to this place. And
yeah,
then
it did change a few times. Until ultimately, end of February, they said, hey, you're going to Chicago. Mm-hmm. We're going to go to Chicago, Illinois, and support the, again, FEMA's emergency response vaccine
mission
set. Yeah, yeah, essentially. And my commander wanted me to go. He wanted a lot of his staff and other support elements there because it's a high-stress mission. Our soldiers were going to work, I mean, now in retrospect, really long days and setting things up. So I knew for sure I was going. And so we set that all up and I left at the very beginning of March. And so while I was gone, probably 2 weeks into the mission set was the 20-week appointment, but we were really at 21, 22 weeks.
Yeah. So it's like the anatomy ultrasound. If you've been pregnant before, like you always get an anatomy ultrasound. Yeah. It's very, it's a word, procedural. No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like
every pregnancy is
standard procedure.
There's a 20 week appointment, yeah, give or take. Right. And so ours was really around 22 weeks just because of timing.
Yeah. Just because of timing and the scheduling and all that kind of stuff. But it was, so I went in for that appointment and he was gone. I don't know how else to say it.
I could say more.
Take it away.
So I was starting my day like any other, getting thought for the day, ready for command. I'm going to go check on the soldiers and everything. Again, we're about 2 weeks into our mission set there. So things were starting to get a little settled. It had been a very hectic 2 weeks. And Michelle sent me a text saying, hey, I'm at the appointment, but something seems wrong. And I was kind of confused. Like, what do you mean there's what could be wrong? And she said, oh, the doctor came in, or the ultrasound tech came in and then left and then came back and left and came back. and something's weird. And so I stepped out to give her a call. And by the time I called, the doc had come in the room with Michelle and told us, with me on the phone, that James no longer had a heartbeat. And so from that point, it was Michelle needing to get instructions to go and have some fluids drawn and different things to do tests. And for me, I found my PA, first of all, a great gentleman, and kind of broke down with him for a second because our command was in a meeting. And then I got with my commander and said, hey, sir, here's the situation. I need to go. If you support that, he said, 100%, we need to get you out of here. And so with the support of my command, I was on emergency leave, put on a flight back home to be with Michelle.
For me, it was, I was down with the ultrasound tech and they sent me up to labor, or not labor and delivery, the OB's office. And a doctor walked me through what some of the next steps were. I will say I was by myself because it was during COVID stuff. And so everything at the hospital was still, you know, no extra people. Austin was gone. I do wish I had like called a friend to come and be with me, but I don't want to inconvenience anybody. And so like one of the people I had thought about calling, she homeschools her kids. So that felt like that would have been a big thing to ask her. And another good friend had family over. I kind of wish I had called them somebody. I did call my mom. And my mom was on the phone for me a while, but she actually was at the doctor's office for my dad for some big medical thing. And then I called my sister. So like somebody was talking to me most of the time, but it was just a lot of tests. And then I had to go to this other clinic for more tests and more ultrasounds and just a lot of needles and testing the amniotic fluid and all that kind of stuff. So that was a really long afternoon. A friend had our kids. Most of them were at school, and then the other ones were with a friend. And then I came home. A friend picked up Austin.
Wasn't just a friend.
Yeah.
It was the brigade chaplain. So for those of you who don't know, I'm a chaplain, and my brigade chaplain was the one who picked me up from the airport. And really simple things that he did was, yeah, one, be there on time. And two, he had a water bottle in a cooler ready for me. He said, hey, here's a water. I got your bags. Sit down, started driving. And really just conversation to the point that I was comfortable. And again, anybody who's in that kind of situation, you don't have to talk. You don't have to. I mean, silence can feel uncomfortable. But I don't remember all what was going through my mind. And as I reflect and think back right now, part of my brain was on more of a mission set mode. So again, as a chaplain, I have dealt with loss in many settings and have been in hospital settings to include being present at other infant or stillbirth miscarriage type loss for families. And so in my mind, I've known what this is like for other people and being present for it for them, but this was my own. And so there were mixed feelings of, okay, I kind of know how this goes, but this is mine and this is different. And so all of that to say, that ride home, I mean, it was about an hour, 15 minutes, because we were at Fort Campbell at the time. Mm-hmm. Nashville to Fort Campbell is about an hour plus drive. And so, you know, just when you're with somebody and they've had a loss, it's good to just be present. You don't have to ask a bunch of questions. You don't have to say much of anything. It was really just a water bottle and some friendship that went a long ways for me in that first day. So got home and didn't have the appointment that night, right? It was the next day.
Yeah, it was the next day.
So we just had to sleep at home, and then the next day we were going to the hospital for the doc's mm-hmm. appointment.
My mom flew in next morning. Yeah. And again, our brigade chaplain, his wife, who was my friend, one of their daughters was with the kids. They went and got my mom from the airport because of when we needed to be at the hospital. It just was hours of tests and forms and making plans with the doctor. And then in the late afternoon, we're like basically gearing up, like being prepared to move into the room where labor was going to be.
We went into the room
and like waiting for her to bring in the medicine to start labor and all that kind of stuff. And she said I had placenta previa. They were just doing last minute
reviews. They were double checking and different things. And they said, we're pretty sure you're actually placenta previa.
Yeah. I was complete placenta previa, which put me at high risk. And that hospital didn't have the things needed for that. So I had to get ambulance down to Nashville, to a hospital there that could handle that kind of situation.
And I drove.
Yeah. So Austin drove the car.
Cold, dark, rainy night.
That was a miserable, moment. Then the doctor, like, we got there and it was like PM or whatever. I don't even know. Super late. Yeah, even later. And so the doctor was like, nothing's happening tonight. So we decided Austin should go stay at a hotel.
Trying to get a good night's.
And I tried.
Which I went to the closest hotel. Big mistake. I always like to stay at Marriott's, and this other hotel was not one. Yeah. And walking in, it was like the guy wasn't at the register or the front desk. I mean, and then when he was, he like wasn't paying attention and he walked away. And I essentially walked out after like 2 minutes of standing in that lobby and went to a Marriott. So this isn't an advertisement for them, but I got great service at the Marriott like I always do. And that was such a silly mistake, but kind of funny to look back on.
Yeah.
That I was just trying to be as close as I could, but then it didn't work out. So I just went another mile down the road, whatever it was. And listen to some music. And that's maybe a lesson learned. And I know I guess we didn't say at the beginning, but we're going to tell our story and then also tell some lessons learned through the whole experience.
Yeah.
Some of those will come out during, and some will maybe just save till the end. But one of them is music. Mm-hmm. Music can calm. Music can connect. Music can be some noise in the silence. And not to fully distract, but hopefully to help soothe or open up the mind and the thoughts. So, anyway, I like Disney stuff. And so was just listening to some like Disney instrumental type classical scores from the movies and things like that as I fell asleep. And that kind of helped ground me, I think, in a pretty chaotic, difficult situation.
I had a completely sleepless night. If anybody else has had placenta previa, you're basically treated like a balloon that's about to pop is what they're afraid of. Like, so I had checked or some kind of like, I think my blood got taken like 5 times that night type thing, just different tests and stuff. So I didn't sleep, but then in the morning, Austin was there and then they induced labor. It was a not happy moment, right? But Austin actually had the idea to do, it was March and I really like baseball. And so basketball. And it's March Madness. So the big college tournament. And I grew up every year, we would fill out brackets, but we kind of do it differently and just do like round by round. So then everybody stays in it. So Austin asked the nurse if they could print out brackets. So that was kind of our attempt to keep, I don't know if it's like you can't be normal, but like not get too sucked into depression, I guess. Like,
I mean, it's the
life in the room, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, we were about to birth our stillborn son. That's difficult. So what can we do to not just be stewing over that, but not also completely try and just pretend like everything's fine. So a normal thing was March Madness brackets. So we filled out some brackets. We took some phone calls. I had a great phone call with my friend Scott, who, again, I think one of the most loving things that has been said to me, he said, welcome to the club. It's not one anyone wants to be a part of, but once you're in, you're in. And they had a daughter who died shortly after birth a few years prior. And so he connected with my experience. He understood on a different level that kind of loss. And that was really helpful. Again, not a lot said. I mean, it's a funny guy. And so we had a pretty normal conversation, even amidst the difficulty. And so, again, that's a lesson learned is where you can connect with people. You don't have to be a subject matter expert. He's a dentist by trade. So it's not like he's a grief counselor or a psychologist or anything. It's, I'm a friend and I'm someone who's gone through something similar. I can give you a call and tell you I love you, say I'm sorry and be present. So that's another little lesson. So we did the March Madness brackets and the epidural, which was awful, and laboring being induced was going on, and it was a really long night with some sleeplessness
just waiting. And then in the morning he was delivered, and I have to say it was a miracle. The expectation the whole time was, because I was placenta previa, was that either How do I not get super graphic? He wouldn't come out whole because the placenta was blocking the, thank you, sorry, the canal. So he wouldn't come out whole, or things would get to a point where I would need a surgery, because they wouldn't want me the placenta to pop and bleeding and all that kind of stuff. I will never forget the doctor's face. I don't think you saw her face, but I'm like looking at her. I will never forget her face when he came out, because he came out perfectly whole. And he came out before the placenta. She was expecting the placenta to be delivered first, and he came out, and she just had this like, and she looked at me and said, "How did you do that?" And I don't think I did that. I think that was a miracle and tender blessing. Because one, it like literally the whole time I'm thinking I'm about to have some medical crisis more than what it was, and bleeding and all this kind of stuff. And I wasn't gonna have any kind of experience with my baby because of how he would have to be delivered and stuff. And none of that happened. So I wasn't in danger, and we got to have time with him. And that just was like, it wasn't the miracle I wanted, but it was the best one that could have happened.
Yeah, so we, sorry,
Yeah,
let me
no,
jump in.
yeah.
So we got to spend a little bit of time with him. I went back in the room as they did some measurements and weight and everything, and got him dressed with a tiny little diaper, and then wrapped him up and brought him back in the room. And we were able to hold him, take some pictures with him. And those are more for us, right? I know some people share them. We haven't really shared those with anybody. I think a few select family members have seen them, and some of that circumstance and timing. And also comfortability and
Gonna
just
say, I don't think that's
availability
like
for
a right
us.
or
But
wrong
it's not,
thing.
I'll say
It's,
it's not right
yeah.
or wrong. I know some people post theirs on their social media accounts, and that's the other unique thing about a child loss, especially stillbirth or shortly thereafter with infant death. Everyone's going to process that loss and include that person in their life differently. And so, and it changes and evolves. And it's not that if, you know, people haven't seen pictures that we've, you know, intentionally tried to snub them or whatever,
Yeah.
but it's also, they're difficult for us to look at. We want to have them. We want to keep that as part of our history. And over time, our thoughts and feelings, you know, ebb and flow and change. But, you know, it's a difficult experience to balance. So that being said, we spent time with him, and then the decision comes, and anybody who's had a loss, there's different ways to handle your deceased family member. And so we chose to do a burial. Not everyone does. Some people will choose cremation, things like that. But we wanted to give him a place to rest in that sense, in our eyes. And again, that's not a right or wrong for other people who choose cremation or other modes of deposition, I believe is the medical term, of the remains of an individual. But yeah, so we had to coordinate that, which was finding a funeral home and different things, and which we did. We found one up close to Fort Campbell in the area, and didn't make all the arrangements, but it was just picking one, right?
Yeah.
And then going home. And going home with most labor and delivery departments, if not all, have some form of departing gift that they'll give you. Gift is maybe the wrong word, but that's what comes to mind. Little remembrance boxes or a little teddy bear or something for you to go home with after a loss like that. And we had a little teddy bear and a couple other little things
Yeah.
that they had given us. So.
Yeah. Also at that point, two thoughts. So for me, the epidural went very poorly without, like, I still can't talk a lot about it.
Yeah, out of five kids, that just wasn't good.
Yeah. So as the epidural wore off on one side of my leg, just I could feel the epidural wearing off and pain coming in. So we were told at the hospital that it just probably would go away and, talk to my doctor. But that was happening at the same time. So we had to leave the hospital empty-handed, and it was very painful for me to walk, which just adds to the, it's like, yeah, trauma and stupidness of the situation, I guess. So we went home. My mom was with the kids. It was good to see the kids. But then we had to be home empty-handed and plan a funeral, which neither of us wanted to do. Luckily, my mom was there, so we were able to kind of come and go. And like, there's just a lot of things. And a funeral is not like an easy or like just two things that need to get done. Like, it's a lot of things. Austin took a lot of that responsibility. And so the next few days we're just making all the arrangements and the decisions and then the funeral. We chose to, for family not to come into town. And so it was just us, our kids, my mom, and then two church leaders. And again, like, kind of like with the cremation and the versus like burial, I don't think there's a right decision. It's one of the lessons I've learned is, and I've read a book, which I am like totally drawing a blank of what it's called. I will put it in the show notes though, of just like that this is my grief and this is his grief. And for us as parents, everybody else still has grief. Grandparents lost a grandson, our kids lost a brother. It's different for us. And we need to not apologize for the decisions that we had to do for our grief. And so for us, that was not having family there. That was like a big and complicated decision that I'm not gonna like go into everything about it, but that was what's best for us. And I know that was kind of hard for some family members. But I,
that was what was best for us at the time.
And, and I, you know, like we could go over and over on, you know, everybody else's opinions about it and what was right and, you know, rehash it out and what really should have happened. But same thing for like cremating. Like I have another military spouse friend who lost a child in a very similar circumstance as a stillborn, and she decided to cremate, and, she has him in a special urn, and every move, it's very stressful because she has to protect that urn unlike any of her other possessions. Whereas for us, every time we move, it's hard. Like, it was hard moving away from Fort Campbell. And, you know, so I guess I'm just saying, like, there's no right decision. I don't think there's... this is a situation where there's not a way that wins. Does that make sense?
You just do the best you can.
Yeah.
Moment.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be hard and hurtful for everybody involved in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's
unfortunate. Just to understand that. But yeah. Like, I think we had a pretty good, you had said something similar when we were going through it. And like, we kind of had a good understanding. But again, that book, like when she had said that in the book of just like, this is your grief, that really helped me. And that helped relieve a lot of guilt of just like, there's not a right way and a way to do this that's going to relieve the pain for anybody. And so if you just kind of let go of that expectation. So there's the funeral. And then after the funeral, it was navigating the injury and Austin going back to work. For me, I was in a lot of pain. I was trying to, it was weird because the hospital told me it should just go away and it's not going away. And then, there was an ER visit and medicine and referrals for physical therapy and all that kind of stuff. For me, it was hard. It was like salt in the wound. And I can't even, you know, I just had nothing at that point is what it felt like. And I don't think I've never heard of anybody's stillbirth. I know miscarriage can be a little bit different, but like it's not a pain-free experience. And that's, again, like just a dumb part of it that we can't avoid. But I just like, I feel like it's important to talk about it because I've talked to so many waiting warriors and they've just never heard somebody talk about it. And it seems like it's one of the things that we like silently go through with it, of just the recovery pain and how that kind of adds to the pain. But then with navigating going back to work, I think again, that's something that like, there's not a right answer, but it's something that you have to figure out between the both of you.
Yeah. No, between us. And then also with your unit.
Right.
And so And every job is different. So it's going to be different for everybody's, you know, position, level, responsibility. And so for me, it was, what are we okay with first between Michelle and I? And then also, what is my command supportive of? So between Michelle and I, we were kind of in a toss-up because, again, my unit was on a special mission set to support the FEMA response to COVID-19 vaccines. And so my command and a lot of our focus was in Chicago. And so a big part of me wanted to be where the mission was at, where the soldiers were at, where the, you know, where I'm more fully needed, again, in my capacity as a chaplain. They're not able to go to worship services on Sunday, so I can run worship services for them in the hotel and things like that, not to mention the pastoral counseling and different things that I can do. And so it was a difficult decision, but my command supported either way, that either return to the mission site with them in Chicago or I stay at home station at Fort Campbell and just kind of pick up duties there. And so as we talked about it, prayed about it, and I thought about it, I wanted to return. Not to escape home, not to escape pain. It was where my heart was. And again, that's, I feel like I was called to this profession. It's not just I chose to become a chaplain, but I feel like God puts me in a place for a reason. And there were really unique ministry opportunities that came when I went back to Chicago. Now, that came at the cost of not being at home. And that's hard. It's not an easy choice. Because I know Michelle probably could have used me, had a shoulder to cry on and a person to be with in person. And I know I could have used her in that same capacity as, and again, our view as husband and wife, that's part of what we're here for each other for, not to be used, but to be there for each other, partnered together in those things. And so there were some tearful nights, there were difficult phone calls. But again, I was able to do some really unique ministry with some of our soldiers that were on mission in Chicago. And that's what I'm in the Army for. And so it was, again, a difficult choice. And it's, again, I don't think right or wrong. That was one that we chose, and there's pros and cons on each side. And I feel like we were blessed through it with support from friends and from leaders and from people in our community, both at home and in Chicago. And so, again, that's an individual choice, and each person will have to navigate it and do so between them and their spouse and their command as they reintegrate into work. Because there were difficult days and difficult moments. where I wasn't quite at my full capacity, but again.
So two things. One is since our experience, the rules have changed.
Well, and
policies have changed
in the last year or so.
So make sure if you go through that. I mean, it's your unit's job to make sure you're aware of it. But like there is more time allotted without messing with your leave and that stress. But a lesson learned, at least for me, has been that you need to let your partner grieve how they need to grieve. They're like, and the way that he's grieving doesn't mean anything about me. It's not like his experience is not going to be the same, and he can't expect mine to be the same. And there doesn't have to be judgment there. He is a father who lost his son. As the mother, my experience was different. One, just being a mother and being a woman and being who I am, like we're just both individuals, but then also the experience is different. And I think it's really easy to say that the mom experiences so much more. And while that is true, we experience different things. A dad still goes through a lot. Yes. And I don't think that's talked about enough. I don't think the dads are addressed enough. I got a lot of sympathy, and I'm so sorry, and attention.
A lot of cards and notes.
A lot of cards and notes, which I very much so appreciate. But I think the dads, and I know I had another friend who had lost somebody, their child, like 6 months or so, a year or something. My sense of time is just completely screwed up ever since this, but shortly before, and she had experienced a very similar thing of just like the dad is kind of ignored. I think that is a bit of a failure on us as society. And I don't mean that like ambivalently of other people are the problem, because I know before my own experience, I had no idea, and I never reached out to any of the dads either. I always just reached out to the wife.
And I will say I did have people reach out to me. It's not that it was completely silent.
Yeah.
though I wouldn't be surprised if there were some that really didn't get much. But like I said, I had a friend who called me very early on before James was even delivered. I had a friend who answered the phone as I was breaking down the day after I got home before we went to the hospital, who's a fellow chaplain. I had, while I was at home, probably around the time we had the funeral, my commander and a lot of the soldiers and leaders that were in Chicago signed a card and sent it to me. And that's one of my cherished possessions from this experience. It was just a simple card of love and sympathy and empathy and care. But if you want to go ratios, a lot fewer interactions toward me than Michelle. And at times it's not like, oh, I want the attention, but it's, am I invisible in my grief, I guess is the question. And in my professional capacity, I know, you know, every father's going to go through it differently. I've been with men who dismissed the loss, essentially, that they kind of, okay, well, yeah, it's a loss, and they just move on, drive on. At least that's the outward expression in the initial interaction. And then I've also held a crying man in my arms whose, you know, wife had a miscarriage, and he's just bawling, and I just hold him and give him some love and ministry and try and listen and, you know, space for that grief to land. And so again, it's going to be very different. But I would stand by what Michelle says. Don't let the men be discounted or disappear in their grief, because the pain can be acute or it can be very dull, but long lasting. And sometimes there's this misconception of, well, I need to be strong for my spouse, either one, whether it's the wife or the husband or the whichever spouse is saying it. Well, I need to be strong for so-and-so. What does strength look like? So that's probably a whole other, you know, podcast episode. Yeah. But to me, there is strength and vulnerability and transparency and saying, I'm feeling broken. I'm feeling sad. I remember sitting with my S1 in Chicago after lunch one day and just starting to kind of cry a little bit because it sucked and the pain had surfaced. You don't get to control when the grief just kind of comes and crashes as a wave. And he sat with me through it. Again, it's not that nobody was there for me. But men, I think in general terms, grieve differently than women because the loss is different. And we have these different cultural and other expectations or ideas that are pushed on us or around us in society. And so just being aware of them and not being dismissive if someone starts to cry in front of you. And there were also times when I got super angry in my grief and I went out and I just started throwing weights around. And I mean, not like violently throwing them, like lifting weights to get some of that energy and anger out and just yelling and kind of, you know, emoting in my own private way. Yeah. And so seen or unseen, the grief is there.
So kind of the next of like timeline experience was that I do feel like I need to address is another like a hard part of the whole experience was the postpartum appointment. That visit's really hard. A visit's really, really hard. You're going back to one, like anytime going to that hospital was very difficult. But then being where somebody had talked you through everything, but then also waiting in a room where there's tiny babies and moms and pregnant people and people that are excited for life, and you are at a loss and in a loss. And that's really difficult. That I was kind of expecting. What I wasn't expecting and really threw me for a loop was to be handed a postpartum paper that was exactly the same as if I had brought a healthy baby home. It was the same paper I had gotten four times before for our other children, asking questions about, is your baby sleeping? Is your baby eating? What's their name? All like just literally all that information. And if you were around on Instagram around that time, I wrote all over that paper. I wrote a lot of things of, why are you asking me this? What is important? That like crossing it out, this isn't necessary. This isn't necessary. I let my anger out on that form. I tried my best to not let my anger out on the nurse who came to get me and asked for the form. But I was very clear that that was not acceptable and not necessary. And that led to some advocating work. And I think one of the unfortunate things about the medical system is it's often the people who are hurting that need to advocate the most and have the best voices for that. I have been trying to work on and advocating so that is not happening, at least in the military medical system, that there are different forms for us and things. But I just have to give a little plug of like, you might have to advocate for yourself and you don't have to be silent about it. Something that really drove me is just thinking like, okay, this is exceptionally painful for me. I don't ever want another mother to have to experience this. So I'm going to say something. Again, I tried to be polite and understanding that like the nurse and the doctor who were in front of me are not the ones, they're not the ones making those decisions.
Yeah.
So don't get angry at them. But I think it was helpful to say, this is not okay. Like, why I need to talk to the person who's making these forms. I need to, like, there's no reason. Well, I think a few times I said, there's no reason for you to be asking me this. And then other times I'm asking, why are you asking me this? Why are you do you really need to be putting, what were some of like the, so one of the questions I asked, why are you asking for me for this? Of like, it was the depression screening questions. And I was just like, I literally just buried my son. Should I be happy? Like, I don't know how to answer this question.
So
I know as like a,
no, I was just going to say that's probably another podcast episode.
Yeah, itself, it is. Though.
So
but, yeah,
not that I'm not wanting to cut you off, but I'm also this could go even further just in the whole advocacy work and systems and how people work in systems and people, you know, mm-hmm. sometimes they're aware of it and other times they're not until you say something. And so Michelle did a great job. And continues to do a great job at trying to help make some of those changes again, so other women in particular don't have to go through a similar type of painful experience after already experiencing a painful loss.
Yeah. And I will say, last thing about the advocacy is we were able to change those forms. Those forms, at least at Fort Campbell Hospital, which if you ever listen to this mm-hmm. and then you do, heaven forbid, have a loss and you don't get those papers, please let me know, because I know exactly who to call and who to change that again.
Yeah. And there was great, very responsive leadership in place that heard mm-hmm. and understood and were empathetic yeah. about the situation. And they realized something that hadn't been brought to their attention before.
Did not know. I think.
It's not the most common thing. And so it's not like the flag gets raised all the time when this happens. And so, again, patience and allowing, I would call it appropriate use of your anger, right? Because there can be very inappropriate use of anger that doesn't make change. And that anger is often a part of grief, and using it in a way that can leverage change without hurting people or burning somebody, you know, and firing someone and attacking and all that kind of stuff can really help. Whether that's, again, in your unit system or the medical system,